swing out in a barroom night. Enter Betty Valentine from the upper hall. She sees a bartender in a pool of blood. Cries out, my God, they've killed them all. Here comes the story of the hurricane. The man the authorities came to blame for something that he never done. Put in a prison cell, but one time he could have been the champion of the world.
Back on Downtown, it's 4:32 on a Wednesday afternoon. Rich Kimble, Bruce Pratt here. And time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101.
Yeah, but right before I get to that, I just want to tell people I have read what is one of the finest novels I have read in 25 years.
Wow.
I put this up with Abide With Me by Elizabeth Strout. I put it up with the best of any books I've ever read called This Is Happiness. It's by Niall Williams, N-I-A-L-L, and it can be pronounced a couple of ways in Ireland, but it's called This Is Happiness. It's one of the most beautifully written and compelling books I've read in a long time. So I wanted to pass that on to people before we get back to Sports Lit.
Excellent.
So last week we talked a little bit about Running Up the Mountain, which is a book that comes from our friend Miles Schrag out at Solstice Publications in Flagstaff, Arizona. It's written by Matt Baxter, a great runner for Northern Arizona University, and Ron Mann, one of the longtime coaches there, who also had a successful career as a coach, and then I believe later also was an AD or assistant AD at Louisville. What makes this book so interesting for me is that there are sports that just go off the radar, you know, in America. If you were to ask me who won the women's NCAA soccer championship last year, I don't know, and I don't know who won the tennis championship or the squash championship or whatever. But if you ask me who won the men's cross country championship, I'd say, well, it was probably either Northern Arizona, BYU, Oklahoma, or Oregon, because these are programs that have dominated this sport. And one of the things that makes the Northern Arizona story so remarkable is it started out as a very small, out-of-the-way, nowhere school, and in 1969, they decided that they would do some running. And what prompted that was the 1968 Olympics. Now, I know I mentioned this a little bit last week, but I want to amplify it a little bit. In 1968, the Mexico City Olympics were held at the highest altitude any Summer Olympics had ever been held. And there was no true scientific understanding of what training at altitude meant. Would it be good to go train at altitude before you got there to acclimate? Well, yeah, people have thought about that for years, that you should probably acclimate. But should you train at altitude for a long period of time? Were there problems with that? Could there be physiological issues? Well, the only proof that probably didn't exist was that there were so many runners emerging as major, you know, competitors and best runners coming out of places in Africa where you could only run at altitude.
Mm.
And so after the 68 Olympics, going into the 68 Olympics, Jim Ryan and a number of our top athletes projected that the times would be slower at the Mexico City Olympics in a number of the distance events. And you know what? For people who didn't train at altitude, they were. And the overall times were a little slower because you're up high, you're up well above a mile high. So people began to think, well, maybe we should start to practice at altitude. And where were the good places to do that? Like Tahoe had a great course, but Flagstaff, Arizona was perfect. It was perfect for a couple of reasons. Flagstaff has altitude, but it also has four seasons. And it's important to run in all four seasons, especially because the National Cross Country Championships are held every year in November, and they have been held in the snowstorm. And Flagstaff will get over 100 inches of snow in the heart of the winter. But it also had the trails, it had the roads, and it had a running tradition. We talked about the Imogene Pass race that goes up over, I mean, it's just insane. It goes over 5,000 feet in elevation and comes back down the other side. But what happened is this became something that this school could be good at. Now, Northern Arizona plays a lot of sports, and it has grown to be a much bigger school than it was when it started out. And they had natural rivalries with BYU being in the next state. But what struck me as the most amazing thing about this school is in 2021, they won the 2020 and the 2021 National Cross Country Championships because the 2020 ones halted for the pandemic, were moved to March in 2021. And so they won the 20 championship in 21 March and then won again in November. The only team to ever win two national titles in the same year because it's the only time that happened. But the COVID, the whole COVID thing and the portal have made the story more compelling. You know, we know, we always said team needs to be peaking at the right time. If you go into the playoffs, you want to be playing your best game if you're a team sport. Same thing for an individual. If you're going to be in the state high school track meet, you want to be peaking right at your regionals or your conference meet so that when you get there, you're ready. Well, they preparing, NAU thought that they would have a very good chance to win the national indoor championship in track and field. Not because, like Oregon, they would have people in a lot of very different disciplines doing well, but instead because they had so many good distance runners, they could win it just there. Now, people say, well, how can that happen? Well, I will point out that when I coached at John Baps, we won one year the girls of the many state championships the girls won because we went as we had 8 of the 10 qualifiers in the 3200. We knew Elise Moody Roberts from Freeport was going to win and we were going to go 2 through 8. And when that happened, it gave us an insurmountable lead with the number of events that were left to go. So you can win if you get three, four, five people that can get first place, you can win a big meet. They were all primed to do that. They were at the venue when the word came out that there would be no track championship that year indoor, that the meet had been canceled for COVID. Everyone needed to go home, which made it extraordinarily difficult because when they got back to campus, classes were now remote. So these guys were living in their houses, working out alone because you weren't supposed to be working out with other people, but they kept at it. This is a story of just incredible courage to me. They kept at it. They didn't give up. They kept going along. They knew they'd lost that. But people were also running out of eligibility because at this point, we didn't know that there was going to be an extra year granted for COVID. So certain athletes could get 6 years, right? If you're a redshirt and your fifth year, there's a COVID problem and they don't finish the season, get the whole season, you can go again. However, in track, it like these the guys who are really good, they only have a limited pro career. It's a much shorter career than a lot of other sports. So they had to wonder whether they were going to go back, finish school, go to graduate school or whatever. Well, they hung together. And the story of winning the 2019, the 2020, and the 2021 cross-country championships with different people moving in and out and the portal and people deciding whether they could go, the hardships. You know, these guys are used to flying to Virginia to be in a meet and flying home. A 13-hour, two-day bus ride to Albuquerque, New Mexico, or to Stillwater, Oklahoma, rather. And then you get there, you get in a bubble, and then the thing is canceled, and you got to turn around and go back the other way. This is not – they don't live the life of Alabama football players or University of Florida baseball teams or the power conference things. And they do something – that's as tough as any sport there is. I've been around a lot of sports in my life, and I've been able to see competition at a very high level. I just cannot believe how inspiring this is. And then there were two things that really brought this home to me, and I want to quote them directly because they were so I thought they were so great. One of the runners who was there's last name is Grijalva, I don't know how you say it, Grijalva, who at 1 year old was brought here from Guatemala. And because he was a DACA person, could never go home to Guatemala. He could never leave the United States. He gets the chance to represent the United States in the Olympics. He qualifies for the Olympics. And if he goes to Japan, will he be able to come back to the U.S.? You know, took all kinds of people jumping through hoops. He did it. He finished 12th, set the Guatemalan all-time record, and was able to accomplish this through just gutsy hard work by not quitting. But the thing I wanted to quote is this. This is about the running community in Flagstaff. Indeed, the running community is as robust as the college program. During summer months, the weekly bagel run, a tradition that's been going on for nearly two decades, can bring more than 100 runners to Biff's Bagels. The Flagstaff Urban Trail system has grown to 56 miles, and based on the city master plan, will continue to grow to 130 miles. HYPO2, which is a running organization, to continue to support some of the best athletes in the world. At the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, athletes from 44 countries who were trained in Flagstaff and used HYPO2 services earned a total of 356 Olympic and Paralympic medals. Flagstaff is not New York. It is not Boston. It is not a huge town. It's a mountain town with a university. 356 Olympians and Paralympians train there. Why do they go there? Because people love to run. And, you know, I think about how we talked last week. You go out and you see like the Labor Day or the Thanksgiving road race here, and you see people of all walks of life and various abilities and like showing up, and all the sub-5 people you expect and people from the other track clubs in the state. Maine has a really great running tradition. I believe that the winningest in terms of state championships, I'm sure this is true, of all is Rod Kelly down at Scarborough. I think he might have 40 by now between cross country and girls and boys track, and he's won in C, B, and A as Scarborough got bigger and bigger and bigger. A tremendous coach. And we've had Olympians, and we've had people that have become famous in running. And you know, it'd be good to learn a little bit about it. And this book won't tell you much about the main runners, but running up the mountain will really give you an insight into what the running mindset is. Not what we see on TV, not the up close and personal, but the guys who you'll never hear their names again, but who hoisted a championship in 19 degree weather running against the sleet. In situations we probably wouldn't go. So anyway, Mike Baxter and Ron Mann will join us later to sort of fill out the things that I haven't talked about in the last couple of weeks.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. And what's next week?
Next week, I'm not absolutely sure. I think next week we're going to be talking about the digital NBA.
Excellent.
And how the NBA has managed to be successful in ways that other sports have not on the international scene. We know how much money football makes. But the most watched U.S. professional sport in the world is basketball by far. More people watch it in China than watch it in the rest of the world.
He said China a little like Trump there.
Yeah.
China. All right. Thanks, Bruce.
Maybe I should go turn my hair.
Bruce Pratt, Sports Lit 101, every Wednesday here on the program.